Hello and welcome to the Pod of the Damned. I'm your host, Ian. Joining me this week, it's just the two of us. It's my co-host, Candy. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing very well. It's been a busy week. Work has been crazy as per usual. And yeah, but it's been good. Things are doing not too bad. I'm still suffering a little bit with my bad back, but you know, it's not as bad as it has been. It was a couple of weeks ago. Not even a couple of weeks ago. It was probably at the start of the week just past. I could barely walk. You know, I was really struggling to get around the place. But you know, I'm doing a bit better just now. Got some nice painkillers that are helping me.
I take You know, my back is really bad because I have to use like a wheelchair sometimes. So, yeah. I got the Norco. I got the muscle relaxers. That stuff is exactly what you need to get back up on your feet.
Absolutely. And
I'm not advocating for it. I'm just saying.
I am absolutely advocating for it.
Just trying to sound, you know, diplomatic, I guess.
Guys, if you're in pain, sometimes the drugs help. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, most of the time I'm on Norco, just to be fair, but it is doctor approved.
But yeah, Candy, I'm very glad that you're feeling better as well. Obviously, we spoke off air about you're not feeling particularly well, so I'm glad you're feeling better. You've had a busy week too, by the sounds of it, as well.
Yeah, did a lot of traveling and you know, girls trip kind of thing. Did some shopping and then I came back and got really sick, of course. So
it's always that always tends to happen as well though when you do go away. I find that as well. Like if I go away and then I come back, I always feel worse when I get back.
As soon as I walked in the house, I was like, fuck. But no, I'm kidding.
That's how I usually feel when I walk into work. It's like, fuck.
That is my work.
Like I said, so obviously it's just the two of us here today. Nico sends his apologies. For those of you who are maybe tuning in for Nico's fun stories, well, fuck you guys, he's not here today. He apologized. No, he's still at work. He's ended up having to work late. He has sent me some comments on the movies, which I'll read out when we get to that segment of the show. He sent me his ratings, so we will include them in our overall score, like we always do. But before we kick into any sort of main discussion, don't forget we are a horror podcast that deep dives into a different topic every single week in our quest to create a leaderboard of the best and worst horror movies of all time. This is episode number 109. In today's show, we're really tackling like a monster here because, you know, this isn't just one movie we're talking about today. We're talking about Grindhouse. We're talking about Death Proof. We're talking about Planet Terror and all those cool little trailers that came in between it as well. Candy, this was your choice for this week.
Yes, it was.
So I'm sure you're going to have plenty of fun and interesting things to say. And for those of you who subscribe to us on our Patreon, we're going to record a little bit of a bonus segment where Candy's going to show off some goodies, I believe. That sounded really dodgy. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that actually. Not those kind of goodies, but you know, if you're a horror fan, you might be into them.
Yeah. And so, yeah, that will be going up exclusive to our Patreon subscribers as well. I'll give out the details for all of that in a couple of seconds. If you would like to support us across our social media platforms, you can do so. We're on X at Damned Podcast. Facebook and Instagram is Pod of the Damned. You can email us at podofthedamned@gmail.com. And you can subscribe to us on Patreon, patreon.com/Pod of the Damned. So, Candy, this was your choice of movie this week. Why have you chosen Grindhouse? Why have you chosen this to review?
That's kind of a complicated question. I have a couple answers. One, it's like a really special movie to me. Sort of like when it came around, I had to put on the only Grindhouse shirt I have. So this is gonna look dodgy, but it's this little bitty shirt.
It's the goodies.
There's the goodies. But it has like the release date. So it came out April 6, 2007. And I was recovering from my C-section, having my son, my baby, my last child. And my friend took me to see it. And it was like this movie I've always associated with my son. It was like the first time he was like, you need to get away from the kids. Let's go out. Let's go see this movie. And we were really pumped about it. You know, because there was kind of like this undercurrent of like, they're going to have these trailers. Plus, also, there's like the bonus of I'm a Grindhouse movie fan. So, you know, I was kind of like really excited because we got two big names. We got Robert Rodriguez. We've got Quentin Tarantino. And they're trying to bring Grindhouse to the mainstream. And I think I'm going to go more into that particular thing later. But I love Grindhouse movies and they were always a double feature. And so there's some stories about why this movie failed, and I know exactly why it failed. But I had a one it's one of my favorite stories from like a theater experience. So it's really special to me. I collect a lot of like memorabilia. I've met a lot of the cast, and so yeah, there's a million reasons basically why I
Awesome.
picked it.
Well, I'm sure we'll get into m many of them. With that being said, let's just fire into it. As I've said already, today we are reviewing Grindhouse.
It was called The Grindhouse. Theaters that played back-to-back movies featuring uncensored sexuality and hardcore thrills. Now, Tarantino and Rodriguez are bringing The Grindhouse back with two explosive feature films. First,
they're stealing biochemical weapons.
When the laws of science are broken, the last hope for humanity rests in the hands of a few. Doc Block, his prescription, pain.
We gotta lose the arm, Joe.
What do you mean, lose arm? My arm?
Dakota, one hot mama who knows the score.
If anyone comes to the door, I want you to shoot them.
What if it's Dad?
Hello, baby.
Especially if it's your dad.
El Rey, cross him and it's lights out. And Jerry Darling.
I made you something.
She tastes like trouble. With an attitude to boot. In Robert Rodriguez, Planet Terror.
Then.
Buckle up, because a new kind of terror is coming at 200 miles per hour.
Ladies, we're gonna have some fun.
Things as fetching as a bruised ego on a beautiful angel.
Is that cowboy wisdom?
I'm not a cowboy, Pam. I'm a stuntman.
Quentin Tarantino's Death Proof.
This car is 100% death proof. Only to get the benefit of it, honey, you really need to be sitting in my seat.
Two adrenaline-fueled roller coasters. One ticket to ride. In 2.5 hours of pure dynamite. Planet Terror and Death Proof. Only at the Grindhouse.
This movies. Whatever you want to call it, was released in 2007, was directed by Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino, for the main portions of the movies anyway, the two main features. And it stars Kurt Russell, Rose McGowan, how many people can I go here? Josh Brolin, probably maybe your three top ones. I always try and pick like the three sort of most prominent people in the movies and, you know, I'm going to get into it in just a second because the cast of these things is just insane. But the IMDb plot is as follows. Quentin Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez's homage to exploitation double features in the 60s and 70s with two back-to-back cult films that includes previews of coming attractions between them. This is probably one of the first times where I've done the IMDb blurb about a movie and it actually tells you nothing about the movie that we're actually about to review because
it's kind of a long blurb.
Yeah, because you know we're there's so much to unpack with this thing. I've mentioned it already, so I'm going to fire us straight in here with that point. Normally when you know we review a movie, we will always make a comment, you know, about casting choices and whether or not we think there's a strong cast, weak cast, however you want it, you know, certain actors are not right for certain roles and certain actors are perfect for certain roles. And you know, sometimes we've reviewed movies where the cast is just stacked, right? You know, you don't understand, but when we're saying like a movie's got like a stacked cast, you're maybe talking like three or four people in there and you're just like, that casting is superb. For anyone who's seen this or anyone who's unaware, obviously, Candy, you'll be aware. But let's just run through some of the cast for this film, right? So we've mentioned a couple of names already. We've got Rose McGowan, who is incredible, I think, in Planet Terror. obviously has a slightly smaller role in Death Proof, but still a very important role. There she is. We've got, I'm just going to run through them quickly. Josh Brolin, Bruce Willis, Danny Trejo, Michael Biehn, Tom Savini, Kurt Russell, Rosario Dawson, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Eli Roth, Sherry Moon Zombie, Bill Moseley, Will Arnett, Nicolas Cage, Nick Frost, Jason Isaacs, Simon Pegg, Rafe Spall, Katie Melua, who is not a person you would think would pop up in these sorts of things. Fergie, you know, so like that list.
Freddie Rodriguez. I'm a big Freddie Rodriguez.
Yeah, I can't believe I left him off my list there. You know, the cast in this is insane. I don't think I've ever seen a movie with a cast that is as stacked as this.
I have to agree. I mean, it's just like there's no lulls. There's nothing. I love the cast. I really don't think they misstepped at any point. Even like Nick Cage's little tiny, we'll get to that. But like even just him popping up, you're just like, that makes so much sense. You know?
It does. It does. Right. Okay. So obviously we're going to review each of these main features on their own merits. We'll probably have a little chat about the whole thing, sort of production put together as a full. And we'll talk about it a little bit. But one thing I put out on social media, I put out a poll on our X account, and I asked our audience to tell us which of the two main features they prefer. Do they prefer Planet Terror, or do they prefer Death Proof? I don't know, did you see the final results of this poll?
I did, and I was pleased.
I mean, it was mighty close. It was much closer than I thought it was going to be. I have to say that. But basically, so we got 104 votes on our X poll, winning with 51.9%. So we're probably talking, what, 3 or 4 votes actually just separating this. Planet Terror took it with 51.9%. Death Proof, 48.1%. I really didn't think it was going to be as close to this because, and maybe this is just my personal opinion coming through, for me, I'm quite like well in favor of one over the other. If that makes sense.
Everybody that I run into, like if like when I reached out on social media, which we'll get to much later, but I ran into the people who preferred the other movie, mm-hmm. and I'm like, they're neither one of them is a bad movie. I enjoy both features. I just have a preference, and everybody else has the opposite preference. So whoever had the same preference as me, like, thank you, because I never seem to run into you people in the wild. I run into the other people, like, oh, okay.
Well, you'll be glad to hear that I also have the same preference as you. I agree with you as well. I don't, Death Proof is still a great feature. I have some issues with Death Proof, however.
I do too.
Which I don't necessarily. I have some issues with Planet Terror as well, but I prefer Planet Terror more than I prefer Death Proof. Again, not to say that I dislike Death Proof, but yeah, we got some comments on that as well. Ren literally said it depends on the day, and on the day he voted, it was Death Proof. So I totally get that sort of train of thought as well, because you know that's, it's like trying to pick your favorite child, isn't it? Like,
exactly.
You know, for some people,
it's a choice.
But you know, Sarah Marie, Planet Terror was the better movie, but loved the ending of Death Proof. Didn't see that happening. Stew World Order, Planet Terror by a mile. So you know, like there's reasonings for people picking all these different things. Obviously, we've just said that, you know, Planet Terror is, I don't know, do you want to do an order for this, or do you want to just, shall we start with the one that maybe we prefer least and we'll finish strong?
Yeah, let's do that.
Let's do that.
That'd
so,
be creative. I like that.
Yeah, so let's go to Death Proof first, then we'll go into Planet Terror, and then at the very end, we'll talk about the sort of overall and the trailers. So let's talk about Death Proof, because Death Proof, I remember. So I remember when this first came out, and it was a couple of years after this first came out when I first came to see it. And obviously, you know, in Planet Terror, that image, you know, that you've got on your t-shirt, like on your shirt and on your necklace of, you know, Rose McGowan with the machine gun, like that is become such an iconic image in horror that it is so recognizable. It is an immediate, just iconic piece of imagery. And I always felt like Death Proof didn't really have that. You know, we've obviously got stunt like
anything. It'd be like the car, but it's not as much as like Rose McGowan is Cherry Darling. Like, mm-hmm. That's just really like it's a huge selling point.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, like when people think of like Grindhouse before, like, okay, I'm about to go into a long spiel. I'll try to keep it short. When they released the film, like, a lot of people who didn't come into Grindhouse or know enough about Grindhouse left after Planet Terror. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't see Death Proof till later. So because of that, when they released them on DVD, I was really fucking pissed because they separated them.
Yeah, they did.
I was like, hey, I gotta, because, like, you know, I was a broke mom at the time. I was like, I gotta pick one. Well, it's gonna be Planet Terror. But you know, yeah, Death Proof, it has so many iconic scenes, and you know, Kurt Russell as Stuntman and Mike is amazing, but it's not Rose McGowan as fucking Cherry Darling.
But that's, you know, the thing, you know, we've got Kurt Russell in here, and, you know, Kurt Russell is in a whole bunch of some of my favorite movies of all time. My second favorite horror movie of all time is The Thing, which is, everyone knows, and Kurt Russell is fantastic in that, and, you know, he's been in quite a few John Carpenter numbers, and I think Kurt Russell is fantastic, and yeah, I'm really happy that you sort of got a bit of a revival as well in the past sort of like 5 to 10 years with, you know, coming into Guardians of the Galaxy, that franchise, and things like that. And he's incredible here as, you know, Stuntman Mike. You know, he's very charming, but also in that sort of, we all know there's something really fucked up with you kind of way, but you're being very charming. So it's that sort of thing, like, people, he has that personality where you'd be like, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt. Unfortunately, giving Stuntman Mike the benefit of the doubt is going to mean that you're going to die, you know? Yeah. And The problem I think I have most with Death Proof in comparison to Planet Terror, it's a pacing issue for me with Death Proof.
Me too.
I think the pacing of Death Proof, and I don't know, it's like, you know, we spend so much time with, you know, the initial group, and then, you know, obviously we see Stuntman Mike trying to, you know, sort of weasel his way into there and trying to get them so that they can become his latest victims, and in the end, you know, it becomes Rose McGowan as his victim in the first instance, and then we spend so much time with the second group, and it feels like, you know, it feels really drawn out, and the thing I think for me is, in these long drawn out segments, and again, this is not a comment on any of the performers that are in these segments, because I think everyone does their roles really, really well. I just, yes, don't think there's enough really memorable stuff happening in that time, and for it to happen for such big lengths of time, and then suddenly you've got, you know, okay, right, Rose McGowan's in the car, he's killing her, ace, right, let's go, and then we go back into how it was before that, and then, yes, great, we've got that last 20 minutes where we've got the big chases and they're playing the game on the hood of the car and it's really exciting, and then that's it, it's over. And so I have real issues with the pacing of this film, and that's the reason Planet Terror is just fucking balls to the wall from A to Z.
From go. You, yeah, know, absolutely.
Yeah, like there is no lull in Planet Terror, which, you know, I understand would also potentially put people off as well. You know, some people, you know, need those sorts of peaks and troughs that happen naturally. But I don't know. How do you feel about that sort of, like, the pacing of Death Proof? Because I don't know if you agree with me or not.
Always been my problem with Death Proof. Like, it's very Tarantino, which is a good thing. I mean, I enjoy his films a lot. But, you know, when you're working with a double feature format, it's shorter than his normal works.
Yeah.
And he's very, like, his scripts are very talky, you know, and I get what he was going for. Like, you know, this is a very subgenre of a subgenre of a subgenre with, like, the Death Beat chases a sort of Grindhouse subgenre. But it's like, it's very talky. And I don't normally mind that. I actually really enjoy that.
Yeah.
But by the time you sat through Planet Terror and the fake trailers, which are fantastic, and then you get to this and you're kind of like, oh, we're doing this. Wait, what are we doing? I mean, it just kind of, like, it stops and starts a lot. And it's like, I wouldn't have minded if it was just like we didn't get that second group, mm-hmm, or everything happened with that first group. It's kind of like, and even if he was going to go that route, like, okay, here's the first group, you know what he's about. Like, it could have been a little shorter. It just, the pacing is so off. And especially for a high speed chase kind of movie, it sputters out at times and then it comes back, and it's totally worth the watch. And I enjoy it. It's really well done. well written as usual, great music, everything about that. I love it. But for the second feature, and typically, I mean, it does make sense as what they would do back in the grindhouse days, because I'm currently writing a novel about grindhouse theater. And it makes sense for it to be the second feature, because usually the big draw is the first feature and the second feature is kind of tacked on to make a little bit more money. But like, I don't know why Quentin would do that to himself. You know, like, I think maybe if if Death Proof came first, maybe it wouldn't have felt so long, because Planet Terror is just click, 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 you're going, you're going, you're going. And then Death Proof's like, we're going to slow it down. So that's it. I think it suffers in this format.
Yeah.
Again, I don't dislike it. I really do enjoy Death Proof, but there's times when it feels a little long.
Yeah, I think as well, because they're very obviously they're both part of this sort of grindhouse double feature, but they're both very, very different movies as well. You know, there's mm-hmm. and you've got this sort of balls to the wall, kind of really gross, disgusting, gory feature that we'll go into more detail, and then it's followed by this. And don't get me wrong, again, like you're saying, Death Booth has those moments, when he kills all the girls in the car in that first instance, and we get to see all the body parts flying away and the tire hitting her face and all of those sorts of things, and that's all cool and gnarly,
flying off,
and that's all fucking awesome, that's gnarly as fuck, or the moment, or even at the very end. And I have to say, one of my favorite parts about Death Proof is, right, they go through this whole movie, Kurt Russell being this fucking badass mysterious fucking killer shark, and then at the very end he's just a little bitch. when he gets
shot, he's all screaming and crying, and then Zoe Bell takes the fucking pike to him, and then they all kick his ass, and like fucking Rosario Dawson like does like the fucking drop kick on him. I'm like, that was cool.
Yeah,
you know, but we had to go a long way to get here, didn't we?
Yeah, that's it. And I really don't want to, like, I really, like, pains to say, like, I really enjoy Death Proof, and I really enjoy all the performances. I don't think there's bad performances in here. It's absolutely nothing to do with that. And I get what you're saying about Tarantino as well. Tarantino's not my favorite director in the world, to be honest. I prefer Robert Rodriguez to Quentin Tarantino. However, I think
it seems like Robert Rodriguez has a lot more fun with what he's doing. Quentin Tarantino's very serious about,
which is fine. Having said that,
nothing wrong with it at all.
Having said that,
different flavors.
I think Tarantino's ceiling is higher than Rodriguez's, despite the fact that I prefer, one of my sort of favorite non-horror films is Reservoir Dogs. I absolutely adore that movie. I love it. I love it to pieces. And
amazing.
Tarantino has also released a lot less as well than Rodriguez. Rodriguez has gone on and had sort of a much more, I wouldn't say fruitful career, because Tarantino's had a pretty fucking cool career. But as a director, I probably just prefer Robert Rodriguez over that. So I probably maybe got a bit of that going for it as well from my perspective. Because, yeah, I think when we look at the two sort of side by side, Planet Terror is definitely the one where you're like, yeah, they had a fucking blast recording this.
You know? Looked like so much fun.
Sorry for people at home there. I just decided to take a sip of my coffee right slap bang in the middle of a sentence. You'd think I'd have gotten good at that stuff by now, but, apparently not. But, yeah, so I was a little surprised, when we were taking some of those things into account when we put that poll out, just how close that was, because I really thought it was maybe going to skew sort of three quarters into the sort of Planet Terror side and maybe like a quarter down Death Proof. So for it to be so, and obviously this is just a straw poll, it maybe doesn't represent a wider, but it's what the vote happened, and there was a good number of votes on there, so I think we can look at that and be really kind of 50-50 about it. So yeah, that definitely did surprise me quite a lot. Well, I think as well, because I rewatched it again earlier today, sort of finalised my notes, and I have, obviously each sort of segment set out, for the attractions and Planet Terror and Death Proof, and I have probably about a full page worth of like sort of bullet points for Planet Terror, And I think I've got about like five lines for Death Proof. Because the thing is, right, you're watching it and you're watching it and you're watching it. And yes, you know, the script's great. The performances are great. The bits that are really exciting that happens is great. But there's nothing really important going on with what they're saying.
It felt very, you know, like I said, he's very dialogue heavy. And I know what he was going for, or at least I think I do, where it's like, I'm going to establish these characters, you're going to care about these characters, and then I'm going to kill them.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to bring you some new characters, and it's like, so we're doing this again. But I don't think, you know, with the second group of characters, we needed to go into that much depth as we did with the first, which is kind of a little bit of a fake out, like, okay, you care about these people, and they're going to die.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we get to the second group, it's like, we don't need to do that length again. We kind of get what's going on, so we can go straight into the awesome part with, you know, Zoe Bell, stunt woman. You know, she did she was Uma Thurman's stunt woman in Kill Bill, and she's fucking cool. Zoe Bell's the shit. She's amazing. But like, you know, like her on the fucking hood of the car with the thing, I mean, that's amazing. That's like a great, and then, you know, we got the very real danger of Stuntman Mike trying to kill him. It's like, couldn't we have just gone ahead? Like, we get the idea.
Yeah.
But I think like Tarantino is a little full of himself, because he was really upset. He called this hit, you know, it technically was a flop, the whole movie.
Oh yeah.
But he said that, you know, he's come around later to stop being so negative about Death Proof and said, you know, it's his favorite flop, I guess. But it's something that I think would have benefited more from just being its own movie.
Yeah, I think had this been its own entity of a thing, I think the enjoyment, there's a number of things, as you said earlier as well, you know, this is quite a bit shorter than a sort of generic Tarantino movie would be, because of this type of scripts that he likes to work with, because of, you know, the dialogue heavy nature of his films, you know. And because when we were first introduced to that second group, you know, he's paying homage to Reservoir Dogs in that, you know, scene from that opening scene in that movie, which is an incredible scene in that movie, you know. But we don't need it here in this film. And for me, you know, I'm fine with introducing, you know, a second group of characters after that first, but it would have made a lot more sense to me, and I would have cared about it all a lot more had, say, one of the original group survived, and then they were going after Stuntman Mike. That I would have cared. I would have cared about that. I'd be so much more invested in that.
Because honestly, as much as I enjoyed the second group of girls, I cared more about the first group, because we really got a lot more detail. So then they die, and you're just like, "Fuck," you know. And then after that, I was kind of like, "Well, I know what we're doing here."
Yeah.
Although what saves it is that awesome car chase.
Yeah.
That makes it like your edge of your seat. That's a really great sequence. And I enjoy the fuck out of that. It's just like, you take a little long to get there.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. It's absolutely a pacing issue with this movie. That is the number one thing for me. And it's definitely something that Planet Terror doesn't suffer for. I'll open up the floor to you about Death Proof, because, you know, we've definitely got a lot to talk about with Planet Terror, so, you know, feel free to fill your boots about that, because, and then obviously we'll go back over it all again at the end. But is there anything else with Death Proof that you want to quickly sort of bring up?
I'm not a car person, but they do have my favorite car in it, and they're referencing Duel.
Yeah,
you know, like they're, you know, because Tarantino is big on like referencing things. And, you know, one of my other issues with Death Proof, and it's really a stickler thing, is like, you know, at the beginning we get kind of the rough cuts. They both wanted to do a missing reel, as sometimes happened, you know, in the old school with the grindhouse movies. Yeah. And they're usually on terrible prints, but as Death Proof goes along, it gets a lot cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
So we got the scratches, and we've got the weird, you know, like the very obvious cigarette burns for the next reel and shit like that. And then it gets really smooth.
Yeah. I spotted that.
I'm like, why would you go for that and then stop in the middle?
Yeah, I spotted that as well. I thought Planet Terror managed to sort of maintain that aesthetic throughout much more effectively than they did in Death Proof as well. Because you're right, in that sort of last sort of portion, which, you know, they should have maintained. I guess maybe, you know, when you're going through that big sort of final car chase scene, you maybe get away with it a little bit more because people are more distracted, you know, they're busy, they're watching this fucking really badass car chase going on.
It's pretty, like, the stakes are so high, you're just really on the edge of your seat.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, you get that flip around of, you know, Kurt Russell hunting them down, and then all of a sudden, like we said, when he gets shot, just becoming this, like, whiny little bitch and just sort of screaming. And then, the, you know, that moment where they finally sort of finally get him off the road and he's just sort of hanging out the side of the car and, you know, he's still screaming. And he even says to them, oh, watch my leg, I think, at one point.
He's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. And, you know, I think as well, you know, when we're talking, because obviously, you know, we're referencing sort of exploitation movies and, you know, back into that old sort of grindhouse days as well. And I think, you know, that I think this is quite an empowering movie as well for women, you know, when we've got all of these really, really strong characters throughout both movies, you know, not just Death Proof, but Planet Terror as well. You know, we get really, really strong female leads in these roles, you know, obviously, at times they're kind of hypersexualized somewhat, which is probably to be expected when you're watching a Quentin Tarantino movie.
But also, you know, if there's, you know, because Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino are very inspired by grindhouse films, and they're always over-sexualized with the women. So it tracked for me. It didn't bother me in the slightest, because those films were exploitation for a reason.
Yeah.
And usually a lot of TNA, a lot of sexualizing all these women. So it tracked.
Yeah.
I guess.
And, you know, like you say, we get the, you know, all the people. And I think when, especially in Planet Terror, when you've got someone like Rose McGowan, who, you know, has had, you know, such issues with sort of Hollywood, and, you know, I'm sure we'll probably speak about that a little bit and when we get onto Planet Terror and later on in the episode, you know, I think having her in this movie was a really important thing. And there is obviously reasons why Robert Rodriguez specifically chose Rose McGowan for that role, which is, you know, a very, very not a good reason when you look at the sort of bigger picture, but a very, very important thing as well. So I think Rose McGowan in here is, you know, to someone who maybe doesn't know that backstory or you know, isn't paying too much attention, might just look at her, because Rose McGowan is an incredibly beautiful woman and she's a very attractive woman.
Yes.
And, you know, she was actually in my home city a couple of months ago at the Comic-Con that Nico went to. She was the sort of headliner, I think, of, well, no, she wasn't. Her and Karen Gillan were the two headliners for our Comic-Con. So, you know, for my little old city, that's two kind of pretty big fucking names for us. So, I'm sure Nico will probably tell us a thing or two when he's back next week. But yeah, just to highlight how, like, the importance of her in that, you know, it is massively important, I think, that it was her in those roles, especially as sort of cherry darling as well.
Absolutely.
Okay, right. I know we've sort of fired through Death Proof there a little bit, but, you know, we do have two movies to review in this one.
Right.
And we've got some we've got extras and other bits and pieces to be doing. So we'll move into Planet Terror now, because obviously this is the one that we both said that we prefer, that we, you know, we enjoy maybe the slightly more. What you know, we've already sort of alluded to the fact that, you know, this one, in terms of that pacing issue, it's just fucking balls to the wall from A to Z. It's obviously a very different style of movie as well, because we're essentially talking about a zombie sort of outbreak style of movie. But this one, for me, what really, really does it for me with Planet Terror, the effects in Planet Terror are absolutely incredible. You know, when, and, you know, you've got the master of effects, Tom Savini, on your screen as well. You know, it's...
And you've got Gregory Nicotero, one of his little apprentices, who went on to do quite well for himself, doing the effects. So they went for a very specific style, you know, actually referencing the old grindhouse films, where it's like, you know, and we see a little bit of that in, like, Tarantino's, like, Django Unchained, like, where it's like they would take these Chinese condoms and fill them with blood, and then so the shots, you know, there's just, like, a lot of splatter.
Yeah,
you know, this is, like, a really gross movie. I love it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what this movie is, though, isn't it? It's just gross, you know. From that opening scene where, you know, he's cutting the guy's testicles off, and then you know, the scene where Josh Brolin gets the pustule exploding in his face, you know, and even then, just to, like, the scene of Quentin Tarantino with his pants around his ankles and his, you know, his junk sort of just melting off of him.
He's like, it's okay, I'll make it quick. I'm like, I don't think you got anything left there, partner.
Yeah, there's quite a lot of drippage there. I mean, like, is he I think he's is he overcompensating for something?
Well,
but I think the thing for me is as well, you know, like the plot of this movie is a lot thicker as well than the one of Death Proof. There is actually a plot to follow in Planet Terror.
There's a lot of plot.
You know, and I think the characters by and large are just much more interesting than they are again in Death Proof, because this was again my issue with Death Proof. Even though we got all this sort of chat and all this sort of script, we didn't really learn a lot about the actual characters. Whereas here in Planet Terror, you know, we're constantly finding like bits of backstory. Okay, they had a relationship with them, and this is what this person wanted to be, and this is, you know, all these sorts of different things. And it's a much larger cast as well in Planet Terror. So you have all these sort of massive personalities from, you know, like your Josh Brolin and your Rose McGowan and, you know, all your other sort of, everyone else, Bruce Willis, you know, showing up. Michael Biehn, I think Michael Biehn's actually incredible.
He's
great.
He's fantastic.
He's great in this. Spanius, you know, so again,
Yeah, we've got fucking Marley Shelton as Dakota. I fucking love Marley Shelton. You know, so there's just a lot going on, and you're never bored and you're never confused. It just goes.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, there's no... There's no sort of hiding of the plot in this movie. It is just kind of what it is. You know, normally when you watch a horror movie, or when you're watching, not even just horror movie, but any other kind of movies, you know, the plot's supposed to sort of reveal itself as it goes along, and you develop and you learn. But we kind of just know what this is from the beginning. Obviously, there's other bits and pieces, but we know this is a virus outbreak, or a, you know, a zombie outbreak, however you want to actually sort of describe this thing. And... what was really interesting for me as well, because it does bring in us, like, because when you're talking about things like these sort of zombie outbreak movies, it's always about, you know, don't let them bite you, or don't let, you know, things like that. Whereas this one, it's just don't let them, like, touch you. Like, it's literally just by touch. And that's a slightly interesting concept as well, because that is all, by and large, much more terrifying than, you know, just avoiding being bitten or scratched. You know, you can't let these things just get near you at all, and then... you get this sort of really horrible side effect of looking like, you know, this giant blob.
Yeah, that was crazy. But I like the whole concept of what Robert Rodriguez said about it was, you know, with a lot of these exploitation movies, and I watch a lot of them, they'll usually, like, you know, there's this one called Star Crash from, like, early 80s. Late 70s, early 80s. And they had Christopher Plummer playing some... Emperor of the Galaxy or something, and then he had one day's work because they can only afford to pay them one day, and they'd shoot every scene with him in that one day. And so Robert Rodriguez was trying to, like, replicate that with Bruce Willis, like, here's fucking Bruce Willis, and then, you know, he just comes in for one day of work and he's our big name, you know, like our huge star, but we only paid him for one day's work. You shot all the scenes and he was out because he cost the most, you know, for like $10,000, come be in our movie, but you don't, you know, we only can do one day because we can't afford any more days than that. So, you know, you get that feel from it, and then him saying that made a lot of sense to me because I've seen a lot of those movies and it's like, oh, so and so shows up for about 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, you always get that sometimes with not necessarily these sort of low budget films, even just sort of medium budget films, where, yeah, you'll get your entire film and then boom, right at the very end, you know, some icon, some legend will show up to be like your big bad in that like final five minutes, you know. There's I feel like Sigourney Weaver in Cabin in the Woods sort of vibe, you know, where, you know, that she's not in the entire film, but she'll pop up in the last 3 minutes and be the big bad, you know, and
right,
and
like, that, yeah, sort of, we're gonna thing. Pay for one day.
Yeah, I listen, if I could get Sigourney Weaver in my film just for one day, I would happily pay for that.
Like, that's 80% of the budget, but she's going to show up.
Yeah, you know she's going to turn it out as well. It's Sigourney fucking Weaver. But Bruce Weaver, like, but again, like, Bruce Willis is great in this as well. You know, I find it's kind of funny watching him be there, being this sort of, you know, conventionally attractive human being, and then just in the next frame is this giant blob creature, you know. It was quite a funny one. You know, there's lots of interesting, and again, this is a movie that introduces us to characters, though, you know, where they are killed off relatively quickly as well. I forget what her character's name was now, but it's the character that's played by Fergie in that opening scenes where, you know, she's, where, you know, JT comes down and gives her the water, but she dies off really quickly. And, you know, it's
no brainer.
Yeah. So it's definitely this one. I just think Planet Terror just tickles my brain so much more than Death Proof does. You know, it's still one that I can just watch and I don't have to think too much about it. You can watch and if you want to watch this and just enjoy, you know, the effects and the blood and the guts and the disgustingness and the gore and all of that, then, you know, Planet Terror is the fucking film for you because it's got it all in absolute abundance.
And the sappy thing about me is I love the love story in it. And I'm a big love story person. But like my bisexual heart in this movie, I'm in love with both Freddie Rodriguez and Rose McGowan. I'm like, I'll take either. You know, and we get the reel missing at just the right part. I'm like, but it was still really hot and kind of sexy, you know?
It was very steamy. That was a very steamy moment of this movie.
With the table leg on, and that part makes me laugh. I mean, it's funny too. So it's like, you're going to laugh. And then there's so much story, you know, like, okay. So El Rey and Terry have this past. I mean, quickly cover that. You know, JT and his brother, the sheriff, there's stuff between them and he wants the secret barbecue thing. There's all these tiny little things. You know, Dakota wants to leave her husband for Fergie and, you know, take her son. And, you know, there's all these things that actually happen mm-hmm. and just bam, bam, bam. But you're never like lost about it or how the chemical that causes, you know, this kind of outbreak, how it happens. I mean, that's just a quick, like mm-hmm. 2 minute monologue from Bruce Willis. So you're just like, oh, okay. That makes a lot of sense.
But that makes sense with the pacing of the movie because it's so good. Like you don't want, because I think if you then have like, you know, a 10 minute scene where they're going through, this is the chemical and this is what it's all about, then that takes you out of this movie, in my opinion anyway. And I think that would ruin the whole sort of feeling as well. And I think the thing about Planet Terror for me is, unlike in Death Proof, there's a couple of real just oh shit moments as well where you're just like, holy fuck, I can't believe that just happened. One of them for me is when she's getting out the car, she gives her son the gun in the car and she's yeah. like, don't point it at yourself because you're gonna blow your head off. And as soon as she steps foot out of the car, all you hear is that gun going off and you're just like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah, Robert Rodriguez didn't want any other kid to play it. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting take. He had his own son play that role, yeah. Rebel Rodriguez. And I like that he put his brother Freddie in it because I love Freddie Rodriguez. But, you know, it felt like a grindhouse film. Mm. Like you would cast family members. You would do the things that you did. Plus, you know, when we were talking about the distressing in the film in Death Proof, how it kind of goes away. Here it just gets better and better. Yeah. You have the missing reel, but it's never, it always looks kind of shitty. Like it was blown up from 16 millimeter yeah. up to like, you know, the 35. And, you know, and then we have parts like with the Bruce Willis turning into a blob where the camera seems to like, you know, it's almost like the film's about to like melt.
Yeah.
Like it's really shitty and it looks awesome.
Yeah. You know? I think one of the things I love about that sort of missing reel is because obviously that's happening during whilst we're, you know, getting this sort of steamy sex scene as well. But it doesn't just skip over the sex scene. It skips over like whole loads of things. Suddenly Michael Biehn's been fucking shot and is dying and, you know, all of this stuff is happening. And, you know, I think
and he's like, oh, I didn't know you were El Rey.
Yeah.
And it's like, we don't know exactly what that is.
Yeah.
But it must be something cool. He's like, give him all the guns. I mean, there's so many cool lines in this, like, give him the guns, give him all the guns, you know, like, that boy's got the devil in him, you know, like, it's great. It's entertaining.
Yeah. And I think the other sort of oh shit moment for me with this film as well, because we've got Naveen Andrews, who plays Abby in this as well, who I think most people probably know most from Lost. He was in Lost, like the entirety of that. Is the moment he peeks around the corner and gets his fucking head blown off. You know, it's this, yes. like in the one
like
hand,
any other biochemical engineer.
You know, on the one hand, you're like, holy fuck, but it's also hilarious at the same time.
And the effects are like top notch. Mm. They're really good. So it's like so fucking gross. And you're just like, oh shit.
Yeah. And I think one thing, you know, and obviously again, we'll get into this when we get onto that section. You know, we're talking about the effects being great and all this sorts of different things. This is a high budget movie. This wasn't a low budget film. You know, they spent a lot, which is probably partly why, you know, it really struggled to be any sort of success. But this is a high budget movie, so I would expect there to be good effects. But, you know, again, like you say, when you've got people like Tom Savini and Greg Nicotero involved, as horror fans, we know we're going to be in for a good fucking time. It's just like, it's
like, loves to act. I mean, he started out as an actor. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, him playing Tolo, who is a complete dipshit, like the part where Michael Biehn's character is like, okay, don't shoot me. And he's like, Tolo, of course it was you. And that's, you know, Tolo's his finger, you know, earlier on. And, you know, and then when Tolo gets killed, and I'm remembering nothing about this movie, like you'll still have fun with it if you haven't seen it. But he kills him in a way that's very similar. Nicotero looked like he had a little fun killing Tom Savini the way that he killed.
Do you think there was a little bit of venom in that, possibly?
Well, yeah, because Nicotero was in Day of the Dead, which of course Savini did the effects for, and there's a death of one of the military guys that's very similar. I think it was maybe Tasso and that got killed in a very similar way. So he's probably like, ah, Tom, we're getting you back. For because those two have a sick sense of humor, you got to be, I guess, to be in effects like that. But I thought it was funny. I was like, ha, what a nice homage.
I think for me, it's the moment where he tries to put the wedding ring back on his severed, like his finger that's no longer there. But you know,
he ends up putting it on his middle finger.
I think the thing with Tom Savini for me, he just always seems like a guy who's just having a blast. He seems like a guy who is just living his dream. Like he had his dream of what he wanted to do. He wanted to be an actor. He's went on to do all these, like, become the greatest special effects person in horror history, and he's just fucking loving life and having a blast doing
now
it.
Now he teaches school and he's a painter. It's like, man, this dude can do anything.
Yeah, you know, like,
he looks great in his 70s. He's always doing shirtless pics. I'm like, god damn, Savini.
Well, so if you had to choose between Tom Savini and Tom Atkins.
Oh god, that's a Sophie's choice right there. I don't know, man. You know, I would probably, I've had the crush longer on Savini, so I guess I'd have to grandfather in the wrong type. That's the wrong word to use. I like grandfather types. I got my grandfather MILFs, whatever they are. Yeah, it'd have to be Savini because I've had a crush on him longer.
I think
that could be much longer.
I think that could be our poll for next week. You know, who is our audience more attracted to, Tom Savini or Tom Atkins?
I feel like Atkins would win because he's the mustache.
Is it the mustache? That's why I've grown this. You know, it's just to be wins.
Now, I'm not usually a facial hair person, but when like you watch The Fog with Tom Atkins, you're kind of like, oh, you look a little naked.
He is one of those people that just he doesn't look right without
a mustache.
So yeah, like, but Planet Terror, like, again, you know, I'll open up the floor for you, Candy, because I'm sure you've got tons to say about this. But you know, I'll let you go off on your go. What any other thoughts about Planet Terror?
Well, we talked about some iconic like artwork. You know, when people think of Planet Terror, they think of like Jerry Darling with the gun leg. Mm-hmm. But there's also another, like when you went to the theater to see it. And my theater story is pretty cool on this one. But like when you went to the theater to see it, there was the one with Marley Shelton and she had the mascara running down. She had the syringe. That looked fucking cool. Yeah. I mean, the artwork for this was sick. I mean, it sold me right away. I was so excited for this film. Like, if I can tell my theater story.
Go for it.
About this. Like I said, I had had my son not quite a month before, and I was still, like, my stitches from the C-section were recovering. My friend got me out of the house. We go to see this, and we, you know, heard about the fake trailers. We heard, you know, we both loved grindhouse movies, my friend and I. And so we went, and the theater was fucking deserted. Ooh. We went to one of the big downtown theaters, and this was opening weekend, and we had that whole theater to ourselves. We fucking took off our shoes and shit. This is before a lot of them had reclining seats, and this is an old theater downtown. So it was like a historic one, but like fucking nobody was there. And so it was like, just, it was just such a special thing. Cause we're just like talking to each other, not having to whisper like, holy shit, this is cool. Holy shit. Oh my God. You know? And then when the, you know, like the, you know, the second bunch of fake trailers was coming and we knew Death Proof was coming, we were afraid to get up and piss. So we like held our pee because we were like so excited for the trailers. It was a really fun experience and it failed at the movies. And I think the main reason for that is because Grindhouse is never meant to be mainstream. Like Tarantino is such a film nerd. I myself am one. Robert Rodriguez is a film nerd and they're buddies. And they're like, hey, you know, we love these Grindhouse films. I think that's how they came about it, is they were hanging out and they're both talking about, you know, like, wouldn't it be cool to like do a double feature, like the old school Grindhouse things. But the problem is Grindhouse was very like a New York kind of thing or a drive-in kind of thing. It's not for mass consumption. Yeah. And if you're spending that kind of budget, and I think this is where Quentin's ego got to him a little bit. If you're spending the kind of budget that you spent on this double feature, you realize that you're reaching out for a mainstream audience who is not going to understand. Like I said, half the people would leave after Planet Terror that did see this because they don't, because we don't do double features anymore. Like Grindhouse has been dead since they cleaned up Times Square. You know, it's been gone.
Yeah.
So, you know, especially in a theater, you don't do a double feature. So I just think that they were overreaching with it. Like, I'm going to take this very niche thing and I'm going to make it mass market. And so a lot of people didn't understand, like, why does it look like this? Why are the characters like this? Why, what do they mean missing real? Like, you kind of had to know the genre, and not everybody does. That's why it's Grindhouse. That's why it's exploitation. That's why it's underground. So they tried to take an underground thing and then were really shocked when, you know, most people were like, what the fuck is this? So for me, it was perfect. And I was really, really bummed that it didn't do better, but I was a target audience for this. Like I know my movies and I know what I'm doing. So, but a lot of people were very confused about it. Like, why were there two movies? Mm-hmm. Why did it look like this? Why would they do this? And it's like, oh, see, this was the fatal mistake. So I'm really bummed that it didn't do well. Luckily, it's a cult classic now, but I know that they were really bummed about it at the time, you know, of course, as you would be, but.
Yeah,
this isn't for like your average viewer.
Yeah, you're 100% right. You know, we are the target audience, and this applies to sort of wider horror as well. You know, not just specifically to Grindhouse. You know, when we're watching horror movies, you know, there's a reason why sometimes when we're doing scores for horror movies, there's reasons why, you know, we'll give movies that have absolutely bombed 8s, 9s, and 10s, because, you know, we appreciate for what the genre is, and we can appreciate, you know, what is, you know, a technically very, very good movie. And Grind, this movie, both of them as well, you know, even though we prefer one over the other, both technically very, very good movies, you know. But
absolutely,
as you're saying, it's not marketed for the masses. You know, number one, people will get to the end of Planet Terror and be like, okay, well, that's it, we're done, we've just watched a full movie, because they're both full-length features. And then, you know, some people won't get why is it shot like that? Why is it grimy? Why are there scenes missing? You know, why is this happening? And then you have this sort of suspension of disbelief as well, because, you know, there are scenes in it that are very sort of, you know, unrealistic and unbelievable. She has a machine gun for a leg. Come on. You know,
that's fucking amazing.
It's incredible for us because we know what to expect. You know, that scene where she jumps over the wall, but it's because the explosion happened right next to her, and she managed to propel herself over the wall.
A lot of people were like, well, I thought it was unrealistic because of the gun leg. I'm like, you missed the point there.
Yeah. You know, we've
that's
literally
what Grindhouse movie does. You just check your brain.
You know, and we've also just watched a movie where she's actually hobbling around on half a fucking table leg anyway. So, you know, it's,
which was hilarious. I say this as a disabled person.
You know, so, you know, it's absolutely for me the biggest reason why this didn't work, because the it's a great movie. These are great films. You know, that it's well constructed, it's well put together. It's a really great homage to, like you say, those old Grindhouse style, that old sort of subgenre. It's absolutely perfect. However, it's never ever going to reach the masses, because that wasn't for the mainstream. This isn't for mainstream. Horror isn't mainstream. It's, you know, we can sit here and go for as much as we want and saying that horror's possibly in one of the greatest places it's ever been in terms of reaching out to as many people as possible. And I genuinely think that's the truth. You know, we will probably always say that the 80s was one of the greatest times for horror. And, you know, some people will argue, you know, there are arguments about who more important, but the 80s is widely considered to be the greatest period of horror. But I think we're in the period right now where horror is the most consumed by the masses. And that's probably got something to do with the fact as well, you know, things like Netflix and Prime and in Disney Plus and all these
There's
sorts
of... There's a lot more access than having to, like, dig through a mom and pop video store like we 100%. Had to
And you've also got social media now as well, so word of mouth. Because, you know, you think of some of the movies that have come out in the past sort of decade that have really relied on word of mouth. Things like during the pandemic when Host came out, you know, that was a movie that really spread like wildfire based purely on word of mouth. It's time for my episodic bring up of the movie Terrifier, because that.
Say, are we going to bring up Terrifier?
Because, like, but again, you know, that's a movie that came out, and it wasn't actually until a couple of years after that movie came out that it really started to get the sort of notoriety that it's now gotten. And again, it was a word of mouth thing. You know, that is so much easier to do with these sort of social media platforms as well. Even from 2007, you know, like, it was such a different time for us, like, technologically.
And also with social media, we have more of a network to find other people who like these types of movies, yeah. Who like horror. You can find a community, like, yeah. Pretty much my entire Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. I still kind of call it Twitter, but X, and, you know, mine's all just horror.
Yeah.
My Instagram is pretty much all horror, and I've curated it that way because like I want to people post a movie. I'm like, fuck, I actually haven't seen that. I'm gonna watch that. Yeah. You know, you can have these cool conversations. So, and we didn't have that back then. It was sort of like if you knew somebody who liked horror, or for me, my mom worked at a video store and I had free access to a lot of shit. So I was usually one like, hey, have you seen such and such? You know, we have a bigger reach.
Mm. So I think that all sort of impacts on it as well. You know, I think had this movie came out, you know, in the last few years, I think we'd maybe be telling a slightly different story because I think we'd be able to target that core audience so much easier. But not only Absolutely. That, everyone who would have seen it, who maybe didn't understand some of the reasons, would then be able to access the answers. You know, social media's got a lot to sort of answer for in terms of the role it plays in society because, you know, social media, in my opinion, in general, is not a particularly good thing. However, you know, it does have its sort of advantages, you know, and it does bring people together and it brings people together and it makes those sorts of suggestions and those connections. And I think had this movie been released, I think that possibly might have seen one of the better sides of social media because I think this movie probably would have been a bigger success.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely think it would have blown up way more because it would have reached its core audience more. And had more people talking, people saying, well, this person's talked it up. I've really got to fucking see this. And my hope, and I don't know this for a fact, but my hope is that when people did see this movie, whether it was on home video later, because they didn't release them together as they were theatrically for several years. I'll show that later. But I actually have like the Blu-ray of the whole thing because that was the only way I wanted it. I had to buy them separately when they first came out. But it was like, I think that maybe this pushed people to look into grindhouse films. Maybe it started a little conversation that's gotten, I think, bigger because now we have stuff like Midnight Pulp, which is a streaming service, which is just exploitation and grindhouse movies. And that's for me. And then we have like a whole section of it on Shudder. We have, you know, all this access to these kinds of films now because a lot of them were out of print. A lot of, you know, it was really of the times that these directors were growing up. And for me, I was, you know, reading about them and hearing about them just through like what channels I had in the 80s and what my mom was showing me from Double Features. I'm like, wait, they used to do what? Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool, you know? So I hope it got more people out there because there seems to be a big resurgence in the grindhouse community and these kind of films. So hopefully, you know, that's the greatness that came out of this besides the actual movie itself, you know, that maybe people looked a little deeper for some crazier shit to watch.
Yeah. I think as well, you know, just to sort of finish up my point about the whole sort of social media aspect thing, I think one of the negative aspects of that is because we've had so you've watched Planet Terror, and you've had this absolutely balls to the wall sort of experience, this fucking movie that just didn't stop from moment one to moment, you know, end. And then you know, people sit and watch things, whether that's in their house, whether it's in the theaters, people sit and look at their phones, you know. And I think it's, I don't think I'm being offensive to people to say that, you know, the attention spans of people are significantly shorter now than they have ever been at any other point in sort of like our modern history. And it's purely down to things like smartphones and social media and things like that. And so I think when you've got...
I struggle with that with my kids, and they're usually pretty great about it. But sometimes I'm like, we watched Late Night with a double last night. I'm like, put your fucking phones down, right? Because like, if you're going to do that, go in the other room, you're going to miss shit. It just annoys me. And I'm not usually a real big stickler on things, but I think, you know, social media has just shortened everybody's, they want instant gratification. They want to get straight to the point, straight to the joke. And I'm like, enjoy the ride. It's so fun.
Yeah.
You know?
100%. Okay. Shall we talk about some of these, some of these coming attractions that we get in this movie,
because this is
definitely sort of, I think when people,
you'll be surprised at what my favorite one is. I think you probably wouldn't be able to guess.
So my favorite one, and it's purely because I think half of the Cornetto trilogy is in it, is Don't.
I love Don't.
Because you know, when we're talking about, you know, all these actors, you know, in there you've got sort of Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. Rafe Spall's in there as well. These are all people that have appeared in those sort of Cornetto trilogy of movies, you know, Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, World's End. And,
yeah, because it's Edgar Wright. That was one he directed.
Yeah, and, you know, these are sort of movies that are really, really close to me and my heart, because they sort of represent, you know, that style of humour and that I love, that section of horror comedy that I love as well. So that would probably be my favourite one, if for nothing else, just because it is that sort of, that sort of corner of people in the horror community as well, you know, because Shaun of the Dead, this is 2007, that will have been at sort of peak as well, you know, in terms of the sort of popularity of that, because Shaun of the Dead was so huge, it was such a huge movie, and it was so massively widespread here, and again, you know, I know we've talked about it before, but it's one of these sort of few British horror movies that has made that jump, hasn't it, across to sort of...
Oh yeah, it was fucking huge here.
Yeah, so, you know, to have them in them. Having said that, Nicolas Cage is Fu Manchu. It will never...
Okay, that's in Werewolf Women of the SS, and that is my favorite. And now, okay, I know I've talked some shit about Rob Zombie. I actually love his music. I love White Zombie. I actually like his solo shit. As a director, he's not my favorite, because I think he's too... what he does in his music is he pulls from a lot of grindhouse movies like Faster Pussycat, Kill Kill, stuff like that in the intros of his songs and like, you know, shit that I like. But like, I think he does that with movies too. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, you can't do that with a movie, because it's very clear that this is, you're not creating a new art form. You're taking art and recycling it. But Werewolf Women of the SS, it plays into a very specific grindhouse exploitation type of film called Nazi-sploitation. And that is a real fucking thing. I shit you not. Like I think the most famous would be the Ilsa movies, like Ilsa, She Wolf of the SS type shit. And so he, like when they were all pitching, because like Eli Roth is friends with, you know, Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino, as we all know, stuff like that. But when Rob Zombie pitched it, he said, Werewolf Women of the SS. And he said, you don't have to tell me anything more, just fucking make it.
Yeah.
And he ended up making like a 30-minute kind of thing, having trouble like cutting it down. Of course, it's got Sherry Moon Zombie in it, but it's definitely playing on the Nazi exploitation. You've got Udo Kier in it. And then out of fucking nowhere, Nick Cage is Fu Manchu. I'm like, man, give this all the awards. This is the craziest shit I've ever seen. And I lose it every time. It was the greatest. I like went up in arms. And most people would not guess that was my favorite trailer. That was my favorite.
I mean, we'll talk about the other ones as well. Because obviously we've got Machete in there as well. And... I adore Danny Trejo. You know, he's...
Oh, yeah, who doesn't?
He's incredible. That'll
and then having Cheech Marin be his, like, brother, who's a priest, and he's like, God forgives. I don't. You know, it was, like, so great.
And then, obviously, you've got Thanksgiving as well. You know, and I just think... I in my head, I've just got this picture of Robert Rodriguez, Quentin Tarantino, Rob Zombie, Edgar Wright, Eli Roth, all sitting in a room together and just coming up with the craziest fucking shit that they could possibly
to
come
up
with.
To be a fly on the fucking wall, like, that had to have been so fun.
Yeah, like, that. I mean, they're all such they're all so different, but they have so many similarities at the same time. You know, you probably think like you'd think Edgar Wright might actually be a bit of an outlier amongst those two, but no, absolutely not. Like I would
And he tapped in specifically to that British market, you know, some of the Hammer films and, you know, with what he did. And I really enjoyed that because I love Hammer films, especially the early trashier ones. Well, I guess they were all trashy to be fair. But I love them. I love Hammer films. So it was really tapping into like that, and it didn't feel out of place whatsoever
Yeah.
at all. I loved it.
And then it's, I don't think it's on the theatrical release. You've got Killer Hobo with a shotgun as
Yeah, that was
well.
only on the Canadian release.
Yeah. Which is
And that
obviously,
was Rutger Hauer.
yeah. Which, yeah, that was not that long ago that one was actually made. I know Thanksgiving was a recent one as well. Machete was made in 2010, I want to say that was released, and then the sequel I think
Yeah,
was,
they made two of
yeah.
those. The Machete Kills.
And then obviously like Thanksgiving came out, I think was it just last year that
Last
actually
year.
last year, and then I think Hobo with a Shotgun was just a couple of years before that as well.
Yeah, because it was before Rutger Hauer passed away, I think.
Yeah, so I think maybe 4 or 5 years, but I can't even remember how. I don't think Rutger Hauer's not been
It's
up.
been a minute,
It's been a
but
minute. It's
not
not been
that
that long. So
minute.
yeah, so obviously these got made into full length features as well. But you know what? Like it's just, I think for me, you know, obviously, you know, I'll say Don't's my favorite, and you're, you know, Werewolf from the SS. But I think Thanksgiving for me is just so out there as well as a trailer. You know, it's just. You, there's it's so raunchy, but every single time like she's getting on with someone, their head is missing. Like,
Yeah, like she's kissing him and then suddenly his head's off. Or,
yeah.
you know, she went down on him and this fucking head's gone. It's like, I love it. It's so good. And you know, a lot of the scenes did make it into the movie. Thanksgiving's one of those films, like, I got what I paid for. Is it a great film? No. It was it fun? Yeah, it was. It was fun.
Yeah,
I don't think there
100%.
needs to be a second one. I love Eli Roth. I have a huge crush on him. I don't always love his movies, though, I gotta be honest.
Yeah.
But like Thanksgiving, I got what I paid for. You know, it was fun. It was a good time.
Yeah.
That was the most craved trailer. People wanted that movie for so long, and here it is, 17 years later, we finally get it. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. That's
Yeah,
fun.
I mean, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's not something that, you know, it's going to go down in the annals of horror history as being this sort of masterpiece of
Yeah.
a movie, but it's a good laugh, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of fun. Like, yeah, I'm gonna throw that on. Why not? Because we went and saw it in theaters, like the kids were excited because it was so much longer later. Like I said, I had just had my son literally like weeks before when Grindhouse came out. And then I got to take him to the theater to see it at, you know, he was 16 at the time. But I'm like, hey, we've come this far. Like 16 years later, we get this movie. Crazy.
So I've got just a couple more points, and then again I'll open up the floor to you for anything else, and then we can move on. One of the big takeaways that I have from these movies is that Bruce Willis killed Osama
Yeah, like that's what how they explain the chemical, and I'm like, all right, I mean, we're in for a penny and for a pound.
this point, you're just like, what the fuck is going on?
At that point, you're just kind of like, all right, we've come this far.
Trigger warning for people in this movie as well, because the dog does die in like really brutal fashion as well. You know, it comes out of nowhere. For me, it's one of those ones that's completely unnecessary. Like
Yeah.
that's maybe like one of the issues I have with Planet Terror, because they're just driving along and it's just like they threw the dog in front of the car
Yeah.
and it explodes. So there is that aspect of it as well. And after I've got one question, right? And it's something, because I always sort of query what how would I react in a sort of apocalyptic setting, you know, whether that be, you know, like a Planet Terror type setting, whether that be, you know, a Dawn of the Dead or any of these sorts of things, right? How would I react? How would I behave? What sort of stereotype character would I become? And I always get a bit confused by why people get super horny in these situations,
I
because
know, right?
I that would be the last thing that would
My
be.
libido would die with most of the human race.
Yeah, like, but the people in this, people in these movies are always super fucking horny. I mean, I know why they're in the movies and why they're super horny for that TNA factor, but you know, it's just like the last thing I would want to do is to, you know, get my hand. Now, if Nico was here,
probably would have an answer.
He probably could give us.
Because I'm with you on this one. Like, oh, that's. I think that'd close up for business. Like, no.
Yeah, no. I. Yeah, the thought of anything actually giving me an erection ever again would be like not happening. It just no, thank you. So yeah, I just want maybe people again. Maybe this is one for the listeners. Maybe this is one we can ask them. Why do people get super horny in apocalyptic situations? Because there's always that sort of...
Maybe they want to get laid one last time. You know, that's all I can think of.
I mean, like,
I don't know.
I love sex as much as the next person, right? But, you know, it's... I'd rather live.
Right. I'm not dying for that.
You know,
I've had some great sex. I've had some bad sex and none of it was worth dying for.
You know what?
Let me tell you.
I'll just be like, you know what? I'm just going to skip this time because if I skip having sex with a person, but it means I can live another 10 years, I'm probably going to have sex again. So, you know, I'll just get it next time. You know, it's like buses.
Put my hopes in the future.
Yeah, it's just like, it's buses, isn't it? Like, you know.
You have a future.
Yeah, exactly. I'll get the next one. It's fine. Oh, I really just painted my sex life as this sort of horrible, just terrible thing.
My sex life isn't terrible at all. Like, far from it. But I'm just telling you that, like, no, I'm not dying for that. It's not so great. There's nothing that's so great that I'm going to die for that. No.
No.
The only things I would die for is, like, if I had to sacrifice myself for my kids or some shit like that. After that, no.
Yeah. Family, you know, I'd say that's probably about it for me, to be honest.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, yeah. Anyways, after that, Candy, anything else about Planet Terror? Anything else about Death Proof? Anything else about any of the coming attractions that you want to bring up? Obviously, we're going to go through some trivia as well, so I'm sure we'll bring up bits and pieces there too. But is there any other sort of points analyzing these that you want to talk about before we move on?
Gosh, it's like one of those things where I have so much that my brain just went empty. This is one of my favorite movies. I don't know if that's spoilery, but this is one of my favorite movies of all time. To have a mainstream film like really go for it and really go all in on something that was underground and very niche and very specific. It was like I said, I really hope it caused some conversations for me. It like really reignited that passion in me. And, you know, Planet Terror is one of those, I get very inspired when I watch it because as cheesy as the dialogue isn't it supposed to be?
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you know, when she's always like useless talent number 32 or whatever, I identify with Cherry a lot. And so I have a lot of Cherry Darling shit all over my house. Like she is iconic to me because, oh, this is a useless talent. But, and then, you know, Dakota comes along, Marley Shelton, and she's like, you know, I had a girlfriend, probably referring to Fergie, that girlfriend, like her actual girlfriend. But, saying that, you know, she believes that at some point in your life, every single useless talent that you have will come in handy. And I find that kind of inspirational. I like that. Or when you feel like you're going down a spiral, just reach up. So like when El Rey goes down and you're, man, I'm heartbroken every fucking time. I'm like, oh no. She's like, you know, and you got Dakota up there, like reach up, you know? And I really like that. And I have to talk about a really funny scene in Planet Terror that I lose it, like cry, laugh, where Freddie Rodriguez, El Rey, he has to ride the pocket bike.
Yes.
That is comedy gold. I am just like losing it. I was just rewatching this the other night and I watched this movie all the time. I was just like, oh my God, the pocket bike. Oh my God.
I actually, I completely forgot that scene existed in the movie scene. And then it came back up again when I was watching it today and I was in stitches watching it. Yeah.
So it's like, it's funny. I feel the emotions in it. Like, I love their kind of troubled relationship. And then, I mean, it's corny. He was like, I never miss, talking about like he got her pregnant.
Oh yeah, yes.
It's so fucking cheesy.
I was like, oh no, that gave
it's
me the.
It's so cheesy. That gave me but the I ick. Fucking eat it up. I eat it up because you're supposed to, you know, you're supposed to like just buy into this crazy ride that you're on. So like, and that's one of the big differences also between Planet Terror and Death Proof is Death Proof is trying not to be so silly.
Yeah.
And Planet Terror is like, I don't give a fuck. Like, we're going to have some drama. Like, I genuinely get upset when the kid shoots himself, but then I'm fucking laughing. I'm laughing at the sex scene. I'm laughing that he got her pregnant because he never misses. And, you know, I'm laughing, but I'm sad. And it's like, it takes me on the whole roller coaster. Like, it does what an exploitation movie is supposed to do. And it feels very genuine. Like, you could have plucked this right out of the set piece. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's fantastic. So, but overall, like when I watch it, it's not like I just watch one because I have, like I said, I have the Blu-ray with the entire theatrical cut. I watch both movies, and it's just always a good time. These aren't facts; these are just my feelings, I guess. But yeah, I really feel like Robert Rodriguez like fucking knocked it out of the park. Like, I'm very impressed. This really impressed me with him. Like, and not that I hadn't seen his other stuff, because when my daughter was little, she used to watch Spy Kids movies.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, Spy Kids, whatever, you know, but like this, okay, yeah. Or, you know, some of his other stuff, like Once Upon a Time in, or Desperado, shit like that. Like, that's fucking amazing. Like,
it's Sin City for me as well, you know. That's
like, oh God, I love Sin City.
I love that movie so much, you know.
And that's very stylized too.
Yeah.
But see, that worked for a mainstream audience much more than this did, unfortunately.
But again, you know, we're talking about movies that have absolutely stacked casts, you know, Sin City.
Oh yeah, Sin City is cool.
That's right up there as well. But, you know, again, what you're talking about there, you know, you're talking about that sort of cheesiness of the script, and, you know, we're lapping that up. We're lapping it up. But again, mainstream audience will not lap that up. You know, they'll just see it as being, oh, this is so cheesy, this is horrible, like, you know, this is bad. They will genuinely think it's bad, when in actual fact, you know, again, it's they're paying homage, and this is the difference, isn't it? This is why
Grindhouse movies are kind of bad.
Yeah.
You know, but they're like so good they're bad.
Yeah. Kind of. It's when we talk about horror movies that are so bad they're good. You know, these are terrible movies, but we have so much fun watching them. They're so funny. And, you know, we just end up having an absolute blast that they become, and that's how things become cult classics. And, you know, Grindhouse, Planet Terror, Death Proof have absolutely obtained cult classic status in amongst horror movies. With 100%.
And that's how you live forever in the horror community.
But, and again, you know, it's how we were talking, you know, I can't remember what we were talking about. We were movies who are setting out to try and be a cult classic. What were we talking about with that? I can't remember what we were talking about.
Oh gosh, it was one we did recently. Maybe Willy's
Wonderland. Yeah, but it was trying to be a cult classic.
If you're trying, you're not doing it right.
Whereas they've set out to just pay homage to this subgenre, and it's therefore become a cult classic. You know, they haven't set out to be, because, you know, Quentin Tarantino, he loves money. He definitely wanted this to be a big old success.
And he was really fucking depressed when it failed.
You know, so.
But now that it's this cult classic, he's like fully embraced it again. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
And it deserves that. It really does.
Cool. Right. Is there anything else you want to talk about quickly, or shall we move on to do some trivia?
Let's do trivia.
Let's do the trivia then.
I'm sure if we bashed your head in, all sorts of secrets would come tumbling out.
As always, we will start off with the finances of the movie. This is all, of course, according to IMDb. So, as per usual, take some of these, maybe with a minor pinch of salt, but they're generally relatively accurate. This movie had a budget of $67 million. So, you know, when we were saying earlier, this is really not a low-budget film. This is a high-budget horror film. And grossed at the box office $25.5 million. So that's a... that's a big loss. That's a big loss.
I gave you my money, though. I tried.
Well, I mean, you know, just making, you know, you have to make their money, you know, 2-3 times back before, you know, a lot of movies will even see profit as well, you know, because normally your marketing budget is generally somewhere in between half and your full budget again, you know, so... yeah, this really didn't make any money. This really... You know, $25.5 million is a lot for quite a lot of horror movies, but not when you spent $67 million making it.
Yeah, but so. That's like less than half.
Yeah, that's
for
bad.
The budget of the film.
Nicolas Cage didn't contribute to that budget because he agreed to play Fu Manchu in the Werewolf Woman SS trailer for free. He did not take a fee for this movie as a favor for his friend Rob Zombie. So yeah, good on
that. Pretty badass in Nicolas Cage of him.
Yeah, that you know what? If there was anyone who you just like not expect, but just you know not be surprised by that piece of trivia, it's Nick Cage.
Right. As Fu Manchu. I'm like, wait, where the fuck does Fu Manchu come into this?
Yeah.
Love it.
You've mentioned this already as well. Zoe Bell, who plays the character of Zoe in the segment Death Proof, does a lot of stunts. She was previously the stunt double for Uma Thurman in the Kill Bill movies. We've been over that. Just to go back to the point I was speaking of earlier about, you know, the importance as well of Rose McGowan being in this movie. So, obviously, you know, Harvey Weinstein... piece of shit, hope he dies very, very, very soon. After the sexual assault allegations against Harvey Weinstein went public in 2017, Robert Rodriguez revealed that Rose McGowan had confided in him about Weinstein assaulting her. She had signed a non-disclosure about it and had subsequently been backlisted from any films that the Weinsteins produced. And Rodriguez has come out and says that he cast McGowan to get even with him, knowing that his brother, Bob Weinstein, who ran Dimension Films, knew nothing of the allegations, and that Harvey could not object to Rose McGowan being in the film without having to reveal himself. So that's kind of badass, I think, from Robert Rodriguez.
Let's say, that's really fucking badass.
Like, from fucking Robert Rodriguez as well. And absolutely fucking kudos to him. And yeah, that's why I think it's so important that Rose McGowan is in this film as well. Because, you know... it's a horrible, horrible thing what happened to her, and you know, yes. it really put the sort of the brakes on her career as well. You know, but you know, she again is someone who's sort of having her revival, and you know, not something, she's someone who's beloved in the horror community anyway. You know these movies, as you say, Cherry Darling, but also Scream as well. You know, she is someone who's well beloved in the horror movie. So it was a really important thing, and kudos to Robert Rodriguez there as well. The
I got a funny fact to throw on that one though.
Yeah, go
that's
for
not.
It.
I mean, that wasn't funny, but in we open with in Planet Terror with her doing her go-go dancing, mm-hmm. and Robert Rodriguez had certain moves he wanted her to do, mm-hmm. so he'd go up there and do them, and yeah. show her. How to do the dance, and I'm like, I'd pay cash money to see that.
I can guarantee no one is paying money for to watch me do that. I don't think I have the physical flexibility to be able to do some of the things that she is able to do in this film. My bones won't stand for that anymore. The original name for Death Proof, just to sort of move us on along, for Death Proof that pops up, it does pop up for about a second right at the very beginning, is Thunderbolt. So. It just flashes on the screen before it cuts to Death Proof. John Carpenter was originally in line to score Planet Terror as well, but Robert Rodriguez ended up taking over the job as composer instead. I would have loved to have known what John Carpenter would have done with Planet Terror. You know, he...
But I really love what Rodriguez did with it, though.
I think
it's very iconic.
Yeah, what Rodriguez did is absolutely perfect for what has ended up being released. You know, I think he's done an absolutely perfect job at it. I would just be really intrigued to see what John Carpenter could come up with for this because,
absolutely.
You know, his scores are so legendary and iconic as well. Eli Roth did the creepy voiceover for his Thanksgiving trailer, so that voice that you can hear is Eli Roth. And last piece of trivia for me, because there is absolutely tons of bits of trivia, and I know you're like a fountain of knowledge about these movies as well, so keep in mind bits. But there was obviously, as most movies, you know, other actors considered for various parts. So for the role of stuntman Mike, we could have had Willem Dafoe was considered. I think Willem Dafoe always knocks it out the park, but I think it would have been a very different
Willem
vibe.
Willem Dafoe is great, but I really loved Kurt Russell in it.
It gets more. There's a couple of names who you can see maybe for like a more sort of physically threatening stance point. So Mickey Rourke and Sylvester Stallone are in there as well. Ving Rhames was under consideration. John Travolta was in consideration for the role.
I can't see that one.
The interesting one for me is John Malkovich. apparently was considered for the role as well. And I would be very interested to see what he would have done with the role of Stuntman Mike.
It would have been something.
We got Kurt Russell. Kurt Russell does a great job. You know, again, just, you know, we've both said that Death Proof is probably our lesser of the two for us, but Kurt Russell's incredible as Stuntman Mike in that movie. Everyone in that film is great. They all do a great job. It's Tarantino that's the issue.
Tarantino's ego got a little too big for the project, I think.
But yeah, so that's it for trivia for me. You know, run through some interesting things there. I hope the listeners at home found some of that interesting. Candy, any other bits of trivia coming off the top of your head that you would like to share with us? Anything you know interesting about the movie?
Well, now it's all left my brain. I'm still thinking about Robert Rodriguez dancing and showing Gal what to do. That's like one of my favorite things. But on the score, I mean, I do agree with you that I think it would have been interesting to hear what John Carpenter did. But I think Rodriguez does some great stuff that like dirty sax and that kind of like high jazzy stuff that we get in Planet Terror fits so well. It's kind of sleazy and dirty. I really like that. And I don't know what Carpenter would have done. I think we would have gotten a different vibe.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with you. You know, like Carpenter's scores always tend, you know, when you think about, you know, Halloween and The Thing and, you know,
it's more ethereal.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't think that would have fit this anywhere near as well. Listen, I'm sure he would have came up with something that was
really, I'm sure it would have been great. I mean, I'm not going to debate that at all.
I think John Carpenter should just go around and just rescore movies that aren't his. And just
it's kind of almost what he does now. Yeah. It's just specifically, you know, soundtracks, because I think he got really burnt out like Romero did with like the studio system and just having his movies bomb all the time, that he doesn't really make movies. He just makes music and he's damn good at it. Yeah, you know,
too right, so,
hey, do your thing, man.
Absolutely. Okay. Excuse me. Anything else before we move on?
Oh, quickly. Why it flashes on Death Proof where it says another title really quick, where it says Thunderbolt and then switches to Death Proof. That was actually on purpose, because a lot of the old grindhouse films had a different title. Like there was a very famous double bill in the early 70s of I Drink Your Blood and Then I Eat Your Skin.
Yeah,
I Eat Your Skin being the second film, but it's actually called Zombie. This is before like Fulci Zombie or anything like that, but then they retitled it I Eat Your Skin, so you see Zombie and then it says I Eat Your Skin to go with I Drink Your Blood, which is a crazy fucking movie. Really grindhousey. I highly suggest it, but I Eat Your Skin is boring as shit. Crazy double bill. But so I think that they were like paying like homage to that by doing that, because a lot of those films they would change the titles just to fit the double bill really well. So I think it was like Quentin's like, oh, we're gonna do this just really quick. But I think it's also one of those niche things that you kind of have to know that, or it's confusing.
Yeah.
So I knew exactly what he was trying to do, but it was like, I think that some people are like, why does it do that?
Yeah. And I think, you know, when we're talking about that and we talk about, you know, the sort of suspension of disbelief and some of the cheesy acting that we're talking about and all the, you know, when you're combining all these factors, I think this, again, this is why it just didn't resonate with that mainstream audience, isn't it? Because it's just, it's too much for your mainstream audience to really sort of get to grips with and accept. You know, especially like you say, for those who aren't familiar with the grindhouse, because again, that is what it's supposed to be, and it does it so fantastically well. These are great movies. This is such a well made double feature, but you know, it's just never going to resonate with the masses in the way that they had hoped it would, because of it's almost a victim of its own sort of success. It's so successfully done in terms of what they were aiming to make and what and achieve by making, but because they've done that so well, it's never going to be that sort of financial mainstream success that they want it to be.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Well, that was a very poignant note to end the trivia on. So, with that being said, we shall move on to our next segment, and we'll do the ratings. and the reviews.
A census taker once tried to test me. I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
And as always, we'll start off with the critics' scores. So IMDb scored this movie a 7.5 out of 10. Metacritic has this at a 7.7. Candy, what do you think Rotten Tomatoes audience and critics have scored this?
God, this is a tricky one because I'm trying to factor in the people who didn't understand it. I know what it deserves. let's say critics. Maybe critics understood a little bit more. I don't know. Let's just go with 70 on critics and maybe 75 on audience.
Okay. I mean, you're not a million miles away, but you've slightly underestimated it, which I'm sure you'll be delighted to hear. The Rotten Tomatoes critics.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
Rotten Tomatoes critics have this at 84%, with the audience having this at 87%, and that's based on over.
Nice. Thank you, audience.
That's based on over a quarter of a million audience reviews. So it's a big pool there. Critics consensus: Grindhouse delivers exhilarating exploitation fare with wit and panache, improving upon its source material with feral intelligence, it says. So, you know, it's ended up being really, really high there on the board. So the critics across the board there,
very glad to hear that.
You know, across the board there from those sorts of critic scores that we always give, that's pretty high ratings. So, you know, that I didn't expect that when, you know, I was putting together my notes for this. I thought that was going to be
much
lower.
I mean, honestly, I guess wrong.
Candy, you were saying before we came on air that you've sort of reached out to get some opinions and some scores. Would you like to share those?
I got a couple scores and I got some opinions, and they're a little different than the ones that we have. So,
okay.
This being one of my favorite films, I was terribly curious. Plus, I just got over being sick and I'm trying to be a little bit more social. okay, this was on Instagram only where I posted it. Damien666 says, I prefer Death Proof over Planet Terror. Both are entertaining in different ways. Doug Sanquetti says, I love seeing this in theaters. They did a great job making it feel like an old Grindhouse film with scratchy, jumpy quality, and the trailers were awesome. Initially, I liked Planet Terror better than Death Proof, but after repeated viewings, it's reversed. I got two separate scores for you here. Reanimator's Mutilation said Planet Terror 7 out of 10, and then they said Death Proof 4 out of 10. Mm. Tim over at Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks Pod, I just did The Warriors with them, has kind of a long one here. It's good. Seeing this in theaters was something special. Planet Terror kicked off with one of the first Splatterfest films I had ever seen as a teenager, and I immediately fell in love. Seeing all of these actors I have seen play major roles in blockbuster films all commit to the camp is what makes that film so great, in my honest opinion. That and the massive amounts of practical effects. Even though I don't have a single complaint about Planet Terror, Death Proof is my favorite film of the two. You have two sets of friends that somehow Quentin Tarantino makes you root for within 20 minutes of each other, and a villain who in the beginning has his car teased almost like black gloves in a giallo film. I'm sorry, that's me interrupting here. That's fucking clever, Tim. Mm-hmm. Not only do both films move at hell of a pace, but Death Proof, in my opinion, features Tarantino's best soundtrack to date when they're all epic, and the greatest car chase ever put to screen, in my opinion. Plus, Tracy Toms as a female Sam Jackson is the perfect cherry on top, going 9 gooey Tarantino balls out of 10. So we get a 9 out of 10 there. Nice. For the whole thing. Sarah Marie Ferry, who I think you mentioned earlier, she put, Planet Terror was a chilling and gooey masterpiece. Death Proof felt like it took a bit too long to get started. Really thought the ending was a smash. Cinema Recall said, it was by far my favorite theatrical experience ever. So upset this wasn't received better with the public when it was first released. My DVD box set, which includes not only Grindhouse with both features and all the trailers included, it also contains the extended cuts of both Planet Terror and Death Proof with special features. It's a 6-disc set, and it is one of my physical media treasures that I got for only $15 at half price books. Pretty fucking sweet. Ghosts of Dying Light said, after seeing in theaters, it was a 10-10 experience. After the DVD releases, I'd say it's a solid 8 out of 10. And Christmas Grady for my last one said, "It's go go, not cry cry. Maybe my favorite thing to say to upset strangers." So thank you guys for responding.
Yeah, there's some really great reviews in there. You know, I think Tim's pretty spot on with a lot of the things he's saying as well. So I have a couple more just to add to that. So Dashes from Dot says 10 out of 10, saw it in theater, and they played them in reverse order. Liked Planet Terror more in the moment. Had to go back to see again because could not get Death Proof out of my head. Loved action movies, but not car chases until Zoe Bell did it. So 10 out of 10 for that. It's interesting though that the theater would have showed it back to back, like in the incorrect order. And then just to wrap it up as well, we have one from Ren, of course.
Great reviews.
Ren. Starts it off with, "Here's an old school lengthy Ren response for you." So buckle up, everyone. "This is a tricky one because I technically have two scores for this. One for the theatrical release and one for the home release because they are two vastly different experiences. For starters, though, separating the two films, Planet Terror is a fun, extremely fast-paced, get-in-and-out gore fest that almost never takes itself seriously. I mean, we end up with Rose McGowan with a machine gun prosthetic leg, Quentin Tarantino's dick melting off, and two brothers arguing over a barbecue recipe while dying. This was meant to check off every box of the 70s, 80s cheese flicks we love, and it did. As for Death Proof, this might be the most underrated Tarantino flick in his catalogue. A serial killer flick set to the backdrop of a 70s car chase movie, like the heavily mentioned Vanishing Point with one of my favourite Quentin Tarantino characters in Stuntman Mike. We get the signature Quentin Tarantino lengthy dialogue scenes, lots of feet, carnage, and some incredible stunt work out of real-life stunt person superhero Zoe Bell. The aforementioned Mike, played by the legend Kurt Russell, is the star of the show, though, and his personality changed from psycho to absolute baby when he starts to lose just might be my favourite personality switch of all time. Both films captured exactly what I wanted when I think of the old Grindhouse double features. So for my score, for the theatrical run, it gets a hard 10 out of 10. The fake cheesy...
Wow, from Ren? Sorry.
From Ren. A 10 out of 10 from Ren. That's a rare thing right there. The fake cheesy trailers, the grainy film on both flicks, Quentin Tarantino removed it for home video, the double feature with intermission, it was more of an experience than harkened back to the glory days of the Grindhouse showings. The home video release gets a 7.5 out of 10. Separating the two films and Quentin Tarantino cleaning his film up causes it to lose some of the charm. It still wouldn't have been the same as seeing it in the theatres, but would have given it a better representation to keep it as it is." Whew. Take a deep breath. Thank you very much for that review, Ren.
Again, I love that review. That's great. Him and Tim really knocked it out of the fucking park.
I mean, I think we're pretty on par with the majority of things that Ren's saying there as well. You know.
Yeah, I agree a lot.
You know, so that's a hard agree, I think, for most of us. As always, guys, thank you to very much to everyone who's given us scores, who's given us reviews, especially some of those lengthier ones there from like so Ren and Tim. Thank you very, very much. I always really enjoy reading what you guys have to say about these movies. So yeah, thank you very, very much. As always, the threads, brain failed me for a moment there. The threads for all of these movies that we review go up, you know, a week or two in advance of us recording episodes. So just go to our social media channels. You know, Candy, you obviously put some up as well. So yeah, please do go to all of our social media channels. They will be up there. And as you've just heard, you know, we'll read all the good ones out on the show as well. With that being said, the scores that you've just informed me of there as well, plus the scores that I got, all of our listeners gave Grindhouse an average of 8.7 out of 10. So that's a nice high score as well.
I'll take it.
Before we get on to our scores, Nico did leave a couple of comments with me just to quickly read out. It's not particularly long because I think he messaged me this whilst he was still at work. So he's just messaged me a few words. He says, "Great double feature. Just the right kind of movies to do it with. Planet Terror, cheesy as hell, and Death Proof, Kurt Russell is just the right kind of creepy. It works so well. Also, Nicolas Cage is Fu Manchu. What can you say?" He also asked me if I could say that he is absolutely gutted to not be reviewing this this episode, as he loves these movies, but together he gives them 8.5 out of 10. So a really high score there from Nico as well.
Take it, yeah.
I'm sure we can get him to expand a little bit on that, you know, when it gets to, when he's back next
week. Yeah, I'm bummed he couldn't be here.
Yeah, so hopefully he can have a few bits and pieces for us to say as well next week. One last thing, just as we were going through some of those reviews there, that just sort of popped back into my head, and I was interested to see what your thoughts would have been on this, because originally for Death Proof with Stuntman Mike, there was to be a scene where he was to be shown to be masturbating, and that got cut. And I would just be interested to know how you would have felt, you know, had they sort of kept that aspect of it in, because as this stands, you know, we're it's not really seen as being a sort of sexually gratifying thing for him. I know it is mentioned at one point, but that's never really shown. So do you think that would have made a big difference had they kept that in?
I kind of have a split answer on that, because I'm such a grindhouse geek and I'm a big film historian. It would have felt right for it to be there, but I'm okay that it's not. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it would have been okay. It would have pushed the envelope a little bit more. But I think, you know, considering that this was to be like mass marketed, it's probably best that it's not there.
Yeah. No, I agree with you as well. It would have been very on brand, but just not maybe
just too much for.
Yeah. No, people. That's absolutely fair. Okay. Right. With that being said, Candy, it's your it's time. On a scale of 0 to 10, what are you rating Grindhouse?
I want to give this a 10 so bad. I really do. But I had to take off half a point. Actually, I'm not even going to take off a full half. I'm going to do like a 9.7.
Oh.
The 0.3 is from the issues we talked about with Death Proof, which I still really, really love. You don't understand? Like, I do watch the double feature the whole time. I don't split them up. I just watch the whole thing. But this 0.3 are for like the pacing issues and Death Proof.
I'm so happy that you've just done that, because for a long time Nico has given me so much shit for not scoring everything as either a full point or a half point, because he does everything by like 7, 7.5, 8, 8.5, you know, that scale. But there's been a
few... I normally do too, but for this one I had to break it.
Yeah, I know, and by and large I normally do too, but I think the very first movie I did that for was Halloween, because I've talked about it many times. I'm never ever going to give a perfect 10 on this podcast. I'm much more generous when I guest on other shows, you know, but on this show I'm never going to give a 10 out of 10. So for Halloween, mm-hmm, I gave it a 9.8. You know, and I was just like, right, okay, there's maybe like one or two like really, really nitpicky things, because I genuinely don't think that there's any movie out there that's absolutely 100% perfect. But Nico gave me so much shit for that. And ever since then, there's been two or three occasions where I've done it just to really annoy him. So I gave I gave Hellraiser like a 9.3. Aliens has like a 9.4. I think he's just annoyed because he thinks there's no like arbitration for like how that works. I don't think it kind of computes in his head. So I'm so happy.
Because I love this movie so much, I'm like, I can't even. A 9.5 is way too low.
Yeah.
But I can't give it a 10. So yeah. I've got to find my little nitpicky things, little tiny things.
I think for me, obviously we've talked quite a lot about, you know, how this is received from like sort of a mass audience, and you know, part of me feels that people like Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino should have known that, you know, what they were making wasn't going to be for the masses. And, you know, the in terms of like the amount of money spent on it, now in terms of like the quality of specifically Planet Terror, you know, I'm taking absolutely nothing away from that, because I think Planet Terror is one of the, for me, absolutely fantastic. I don't feel as positive about Death Proof for as much as I love Kurt Russell, and I love all, you know, some of the, you've got Mary Elizabeth Winstead in there, who I love as well, and some of our other sort of performers. I don't feel as strong about that. So when you're combining the two, and if you know, because there are people who are out there who will not watch this as a double feature, we'll watch one and not the other. I think if you're watching this as a double feature, it fought, especially that sort of middle segment after the first murder in the death car, I think it starts to fall quite flat. So I have real pacing issues with that second one. Having said that, overall, I still think this is an absolutely incredible thing. But all those sorts of things combined, I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10.
Can't sneeze at that. I mean, it's still pretty good.
I think I've been pretty generous lately, Emma. I think since you've came on the show, you've brought out my generous side. I think Nico just makes me a miserable, grumpy bastard. He just has that effect on me. Anyways, all of our scores combined with the critic scores gives Grindhouse an average of 8.4 out of 10. And it puts it in 9th place on our leaderboard. It's broken into the top 10. That's a couple of movies that we've done lately. You know, when we did Tenebrae, you know, I think that was one that we were
I was really surprised that went so high. Yeah, I was so happy.
You know, and that ended up in a really high, you know, that's still in our top 20. And Grindhouse was another one that I was hoping would be really high, but I kind of anticipated it maybe falling kind of in the middle of the leaderboard somewhere, because
definitely wasn't expecting top 10. I was hoping 20 to 30.
Top 10. So it's right
I'm
there.
I'm happy.
So yeah, definitely can't complain at that. Anyways, moving on, Candy, if you are able to, I don't know if you have your list there, we'll go and
do
a little bit of the Candy's catch up, and where we ask you to give us some scores for some of the movies that we previously did on the show before you joined us as a permanent member. You've already obviously done quite a few of these now, and you've had a pretty big impact on the leaderboard already, might I add, because, you know, things have dropped into the, you know, you've re-promoted things into the top 10 and the things have dropped back out of places. So I'd be interested. So I've picked a few. And I think this is sort of how I'm going to do it for moving forward. We're going to pick one that's kind of near the top end of the leaderboard, one that's kind of near the bottom, and one that's somewhere in the middle. So we'll start with the one that's near the bottom. And the movie I'm asking for your score for this week from that end of the leaderboard is Silent Hill.
Find it. It's all in my terrible handwriting.
So while you're looking for that, just to remind everyone, Silent Hill is a movie that I was actually really high on. Nico was slightly less so, but it's not a movie that was particularly well received by the critics. It currently sits in 80th place on the leaderboards. What's your score for Silent Hill?
My score was 4. Okay. I was a huge fan of, now see, this is the problem with me in video game movies. I'm a huge gamer and I loved the Silent Hill games. And then I saw the movie and I was like, what the fuck is this shit? I wasn't as mean to it as I was to Resident Evil, but Silent Hill only gets a 4 for me. It really was not great.
I mean, you're pretty much on a par there with Nico, because he gave it a 4.5. So you are pretty much on the same sort of ballpark figure there. I give it a 7. I actually think...
Sorry, I probably should have edited my look there. Where'd you get 7 from?
I think you've just looked directly into my soul.
Well, I haven't pulled out the eyebrow on you yet, where I get like...
I gave it a 7. I genuinely think, at least at the point where we reviewed it, that it is possibly one of the best video game adaptations there is out there in terms of quality. I think as well, when you look at it, like you say, you look at it in comparison, and when you talk about sort of big like video game franchises back in the day, Resident Evil and Silent Hill, where they were like, they really, really fought. And, you know, I genuinely, like, Silent Hill 2 is right up there for me as one of my favorite video games of all time.
Oh yeah, it's top 10 of, like, especially horror, like, survival games. Silent Hill 2 is, like, fucking god tier. It's amazing.
It is. Silent Hill 2 is the game that I credit with what got me properly into the horror genre in that sort of, you know, period of my life. I'd seen horror movies before, and yeah, I super fucking liked them, but once I played Silent Hill 2, that was it. Like, I was obsessed.
I'm so old. It was 1994 with Resident Evil with me on the original PlayStation, but I was in high school and I'm fucking old.
So I was kind of happy because I was always like a Silent Hill kid and not a Resident Evil kid. And don't get me wrong, I love this Resident Evil video game franchise. I still play Resident Evil video games to this day, but Silent Hill for me in terms of a franchise is like it's right up there. So I was really pleased as well that I just felt that the Silent Hill movie was so superior to the Resident Hill the Resident Evil movies.
Well, I'll
And I
tell you
think
this, I scored it higher than
that's
Resident
true.
Evil.
And I think the thing is about Silent Hill, I think aesthetically it's a really pleasing movie as well in terms of like what the video games represent. And you know, you've got Pyramid Head there being all sort of big and sexy and just like fucking ace. And there's some like really metal scenes in there as well, you know, when he rips her skin off and you've got all the barbed wire at the end, you know. Don't get me wrong, it's definitely a movie that has its issues, but yeah, you know what? I fucking love that movie.
Aesthetically, yes, you're right. It was cool aesthetically. Like I went to this huge Halloween party when it came out, like on home video, and we had it playing sort of in the background as like because that we had this theme. I used to go to these crazy parties in my 20s. But yeah, that was it was cool aesthetically. I just wish the rest of it was better.
Okay. So the that's so your score has actually dropped it a couple of places. It's went from 80th to 82nd place.
Sorry.
So it's not had a massive impact, but what it actually means that Resident Evil: Welcome to Raccoon City has moved above it.
Oh, I feel so bad now. That's not right.
Moving on, so the middle of the table movie. So this movie currently sits in 44th place on our leaderboard. Both me and Nico were pretty high on it. It's Arachnophobia.
I remember when Sean did that with you guys,
Yeah.
and I wouldn't even fucking sit through that movie again. I also gave that a four.
A fo
It was like, I mean, I have a fear of spiders, but yet the movie failed to scare me. I'm terrified of spiders, but like, it just was like, I don't know. It was too funny to be scary. It wasn't funny enough. I don't know. It kind of is boring. Like if it were on a channel, I would change it. Like something
That's
better to do with.
so interesting though, because I think when me and Nico were having that discussion, you know, and I remember Sean being on that sort of the episode for the old show as well. But we our sort of general consensus on it was that, you know, it's sort of tapping into this that probably the biggest fear that the human race has, like the, you know, in terms of like, it's kind of an irrational fear, isn't it? Because realistically, I mean, maybe not for other parts of the country, but especially here in, you know, the UK where we don't have anything, like we don't have venomous spiders here. We don't have things that are going to kill you here. Maybe in Australia, in places like that, then yeah, that's a totally rational fear.
In
But
my neck of the woods in the Midwest, it's brown wolf spiders.
yeah.
And Sean's gotten bitten by spiders, venomous spiders. I don't know if he told you this story twice
Yeah, I think
and had to go to the
I
hospital. It
remember
was
him. Yeah, you did.
gross.
So here, like it's an irrational fear for people from the UK because we just don't have that fear. Yeah, we get some house spiders, but we don't get anything that's gonna do you any sort of damage. And we just thought like, you know, they've tapped into this sort of fear really, really well, whilst also being able to have it of like those moments of levity. So we were really high on it. Having said that, the impact of your score has just moved Arachnophobia from 44th place all the way down to 55th place.
Oh
It's
man.
dropped
Oh.
11 places down that leaderboard. So that's fallen
God,
way.
people hate me. They're like, you're ruining everything.
That's fallen way out of our top 50. Finally, then the
You're
movie
just
that.
picking movies I hate today.
Well, you know, we have to get your reviews on them, so we might as well. The one that's currently sitting near the top of our leaderboard, and in that sort of top section, it's currently sitting in 16th place. What's your score on Hereditary?
I gave Hereditary a 10.
Oh.
Hereditary is one of the films in recent times that scared the fucking shit out of me. Now, as a horror fan, I'm always looking for something that's genuinely going to scare me and not just make me laugh because I laugh at gore and whatever. That movie got me emotionally. It got me on so many levels. It was one of those ones I immediately had to rewatch. It literally fucking scared me. And I'm always looking for that as a horror fan. I don't think I've been that scared since, but it genuinely fucking scared me. And for that, I have to give it a 10 because I'm hard to scare. This is what I do. I watch horror movies. So it's amazing. The performances are great. The drama is good. Ari Aster is really fucking good at that. And Hereditary is genuinely fucking creepy and scary. So all the props to it. It genuinely fucking scared me, I'll admit it.
I mean, I was right there with you. I give it a 9.5. Nico slightly under, but still gave it a 7.5. So he's still pretty high on it as well. For me, Hereditary is one of those movies that it has that fuck. We talked about it with Planet Terror. It has that oh shit moment. That, you know, that moment where, you know, she gets decapitated.
I was like, they're not going to show this. Oh, shit, they are.
You know, and Toni Collette's performance in that movie is absolutely incredible.
Awards. When she's screaming Charlie's name on the floor and just grief, you feel that in your chest. You know, and as a mother, it just really hit me. You know, I loved his influences from Ordinary People, which is a great film with Donald Sutherland, Mary Tyler Moore, whatever, because Ari Aster said that it inspired it, but then he made it scary. And it's like, so you've got the drama, you've got the scares, you've got fucking everything in it. Yeah. Like, it's the whole package.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact is, you could watch that film 5, 6, 7 times and still be noticing things as well.
Details.
It's incredible. So yeah, having said that, I'd just like to point out, Grindhouse is no longer in 9th place. So you've just moved Hereditary from it was in 16th place. It's now in 9th place. So Grindhouse is still in 10th. It's still in our top 10. Hereditary moving right the way up there as well. So there you go. Once again, you know, just putting movies in at the top 10, taking movies back out.
Keeping it exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's that, and unless you have anything else to add, we can check out of this episode. As I said to you guys at the very beginning of this episode, please subscribe to our Patreon page. We are going to be recording a very short extra segment that's going to go up.
I got some fun stuff that I collect from Grindhouse. I brought a couple things out here that I'm going to show off, so you might want to check them out because they're pretty cool.
Yeah, so we were going to do a little show and tell there, or Candy's going to do a little show and tell for us there. That, like I said, it's going to go up on our Patreon. Patreon, it's literally £1, $1, however you want to call it, is the lowest tier on our Patreon page. So go and subscribe to us, patreon.com/podofthedamned. We do have non-horror reviews coming. The first non-horror review topic has been chosen. We will be reviewing it. We just need to organize the date in which we're going to record it. We're going to be doing Candy's pick. It's Pink Flamingos. I know you're...
I can't believe that one. I'm like, you depraved motherfuckers out there, I fucking love you. This is going to be sick and gross and filthy, and I love it. You're gonna get some real passion from me.
It was quite the eclectic choice of movies, to be fair. You know,
I'm a big John Waters fan.
You had picked Pink Flamingos, Nico had picked Dune, and I had picked Toy Story.
We were all over the place.
And for the longest time on that vote, Toy Story didn't have a single vote.
I felt bad.
And like, you know, Pink Flamingos and Dune, you just were kind of like dueling it out. And then I think in the like last couple of hours, I managed to pick up some votes towards the end and I felt a little less bad. So maybe I need to rethink my non-horror choices. I was just going for something that was just going to be the complete opposite of what we do. But I'm super stoked to be reviewing Pink Flamingos. I think we're going to have an absolute blast with that.
It's going to be fun.
So yeah, that's going to be coming to the Patreon relatively shortly as well. And, you know, me and Candy talked about this when we were last recording off air. We've got some exciting stuff coming as well. We're going to be doing some charity work. We're looking to be reviving the Twitch streaming channel. We may not be live streaming all of our episodes, but maybe bringing some gaming stuff back to that. And we're going to be doing some charity work there as well. More information to come of that in the next few weeks as well, which is also going to hopefully include some members from our podcasting network, people that, you know, our listeners are very familiar with, people like Tim from, you know, Horror Flicks and Guitar Picks, Ren, I think Sledgehammer Horror said that they would be up for it, I think, as well, a couple of the other guys in there, Dawn as well. So, you know, that hopefully, you know, we're going to have some really cool stuff to bring you guys in the next few months as well. So patreon.com/podofthedamned is the best way to support us in being able to do that. Our other social medias, as I said, if you want to review us, leave us reviews, leave us your comments, take part in any of the polls or anything like that that we decide to do, we're on X at Damn Podcast, we're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, Pod of the Damned, or you can just literally email us at podofthedamned@gmail.com. We ask for it every week, you know, but please do send us in all of your funny horror stories, any fun trips to the theatre, any fun interactions you've had or interesting interactions or embarrassing interactions you've had with celebrities in the...
Those are all mine. There's nothing anybody can out embarrass me on that one. So don't be ashamed, because trust me, I can probably do worse.
Yeah. So, please send those in to us as well. You know, we'll have an extra little segment on the show for you guys as well to send us in your thoughts and opinions. podofthedamned@gmail.com is that email address. But you can direct message us on any of those social media platforms as well, and we will always try and get back to you guys as well. With that being said, I think that's going to do it for this week's episode. So, Candy, thank you. And very, very obvious that we've been reviewing a two-movie episode, because we're about 45 minutes longer than our normal. I always think, like, Nico kind... I think this is what Nico's, like, plus. He keeps us in check. I think when it's just left to me and you, we just, like...
We'll just keep talking.
We just keep going and keep going and keep going. Because I don't think there's been an episode where it's been me and you, and we've came in at under 2 hours yet. And generally, our episodes go, like, an hour 15, an hour and a half. So, yeah, we're just about hitting that two-hour mark again. So, yeah, Candy, thank you so much once again for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. And thank you once again to everyone for downloading and listening to this episode at home. And until next week on... Oh, no! Actually, I haven't announced next week's episode topic yet. I always do that. I can't believe I've forgotten it. It's because he's not here. It's Nico's choice next week on the show. I'm really excited to review this. I was on your old show to review this. We're talking about Let the Right One In.
And very excited to talk about that.
I think this is going to be a really great discussion. I'm really happy that Nico actually picked this, because I feel like this is kind of a left field pick for Nico.
Yeah, I was surprised to find out it was Nico's pick. I thought it was yours, because I know how you feel about it. Yeah. So I was like, oh, okay.
So
he's not torturing me this week.
I think he's making a conscious effort to pick some movies that he actually thinks is good, and not just what he thinks will put us through the mill. So I think he's being kind to us this week. So yeah, Let the Right One In. I'm super, super stoked to talk about that film. I know you are as well, Candy, and I know Nico will be too. So hopefully Nico will be back as well for us to do that. And then obviously it's my pick after that, but we'll reveal that one next week. I know everyone's going to be excited about that one. And then back to you, Candy, and we obviously already know what you've chosen, and I don't think anyone's going to be surprised at what you've chosen.
No, I am usually pretty predictable.
Anyways, on that note, until next week on the Pod of the Damned, just remember, you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't.